good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton Cuff, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
I'm your host, Wendy Pilot. Robert's off tonight, and he'll be back tomorrow. He's in a meeting tonight with his Ho-Chunk Nation. On Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, we discuss national and Twin Cities Native American news and events. And as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. This portion of the show is brought to you by our very own Native Roots Trading Post. And I just want to tell you a little exciting news. I said it yesterday, and I'm going to keep saying it. This Saturday, March 19th, we're going to have Henry Boucher. Henry was a really great Native American hockey player from the 70s, and he's going to be at the Native Roots Trading Post on Saturday at 10 a.m. And we're located at 700 Nicollet Mall. We're downtown Minneapolis. We're on the first floor of the Dayton's Building. And if you don't know where that is, it's right on the corner where the Mary Tyler Moore statue stands, where she's throwing her hat. Ogama, our very own Ogama, is out on maternity leave with her new baby girl named Nova. So, Ogama, we're wishing you the best. We're hoping everything is going well for you. And in for Ogama, we have Gina Peltier. And Gina is a climate activist. She's a citizen of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, and she works for Honor the Earth. We're going to be talking to her in a little bit. We're going to have Robert Lilligren on tonight. Robert is the president and CEO at the Native American Community Development Institute in Minneapolis, also known as NACDI. And we're going to be talking about some fun stuff with Robert. But first, let's talk to Gina. Hi, Gina. How are you tonight?
Wendy, I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
We're doing great here. Yeah.
It's so beautiful out, isn't it?
It is. It's a beautiful day. And I always call this time of year wet and dirty dog season, because before I even leave the house with our dogs for a walk, I have to like set towels out because I know as soon as we walk in the house, I have to get them at least somewhat dried off before they run into the house and jump on the furniture, because it can be disastrous. And I know that you have the Shelties that, you know, we talked about, and I'm sure you're dealing with it, as of everybody else dealing with this problem right now, but soon everything will be dry and we'll be back to normal. But what I wanted to talk to you about tonight is hemp, right? We're always talking about things that are sustainable, things that we can use instead of other things that are bad. So I really want you to talk about hemp, how you got started learning about hemp and what you know about hemp.
Well, I've been an advocate for hemp forever. It's got so many great qualities, and I don't know if you could see my shirt. It's a Winona's hemp shirt.
Okay. I wish I knew you were wearing that, because I have one and I would have worn mine too. Yes, I love that. I love it
because it has the Mishtadem, the horse, on the sleeves.
Okay,
so
I don't know if I have that.
I thought that was a really neat detail. Just had to throw that out there. And I'm really, really grateful that Winona LaDuke has started this hemp revolution. Hemp has so many great, great, great things about it. And I just want to start out by pointing out, you know, that hemp is different than the marijuana plant. Mm. You know, hemp adapts to a variety of climates. It is federally legal and non-psychoactive. So mm-hmm. that means no matter how much you smoke hemp, you will not get high off of it.
It's like it's drinking an O'Doul's, right? The same kind of thing, right? You're not going to get drunk drinking O'Doul's. So there you go.
Right. You know, and as I said, Winona has her hemp farm, and they just had their fifth annual Indigenous Hemp Conference. That was March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And I attended, I was honored and lucky enough to attend it. And it was so informational. I was so grateful. My favorite part was watching the Dene weavers weave with hemp and seeing their hard work turn into beautiful products. They legit took the hemp plant and, you know, just did their weaving thing. They made it into fiber and then they weaved it. They made a beautiful rug right in front of us. It took quite a long time, but it was great. But I just want to throw it out there, you know, hemp is so great. You know, hemp enhances soil health by shading out weeds. It reduces the need for synthetic herbicides and it adds diversity to crop rotations, improving soil health. Using hemp building materials not only reduces emissions and toxic chemicals being released into the environment, you know, from using wood and concrete and steel production, but it also helps sequester carbon while growing. In the U.S. alone, soil on cropland is eroding 10 times faster than it can be replenished, which is super scary. If we continue to degrade the soil at the rate we are now, the world could run out of topsoil in about 60 years. You know, yeah, hemp is...
You know, somebody just said that, and I don't know how this is true, but I would have to look it up. But somebody said, like, vegetables and fruits and things that were grown in, like, the 1930s and 1920s, the food now that is grown only has like 30% of the nutritional value that it once had because the soil is so depleted and the fruits and the vegetables and the things that we are eating aren't, you know, don't have enough, you know, the nutrients that it once did.
And that's really sad to think about because before the 70s, it was required by farmers to plant hemp in on land that they weren't using, you know, and hemp has the powerful ability to bring our soil back to life, you know, by absorbing carbon and nitrogen out of the air and putting it back into the soil. So it's just, hemp can be used for so many products. I don't know why we're not using it. You know, you can use it for like industrial textiles, like nets, tarps, brakes, and clutch linings, carpets, paper, building materials, food, industrial products like oil paints and fuel. You can make diapers, fabrics, of course. And then there are so many agricultural benefits, like less need for pesticides and, of course, the soil improvement. And, you know, we can also make batteries out of hemp. Hemp batteries last 8 times longer than lithium batteries. Yeah. And then another thing that is really exciting, hemp pulls the toxic forever chemicals out of the soil. The forever chemicals have been associated with health issues ranging from fertility problems to cancer. And I learned, and this is one of the things I did learn at Winona's Hemp Conference, that the hemp does, it's if you have a plot of land that has these forever chemicals in it, you can plant hemp. And I think they said it takes about 3 times of planting the hemp to where it will actually take the chemicals, and it restructures them into thinking that for them to think they're not poison. So it restructures those chemicals into not being poison. And I thought that was amazing. You know, they explained it way better than I did, but I'm always like, explain it to me like I'm 5.
It is. No, really, it is. It's fantastic. Go ahead with a couple more things. We have about a minute left.
Yeah, I love hemp and I could talk about hemp all day, but, you know, fighting the line 3 battle, I had a lot of people say, you know, you use gas and oil to get around. And I always said, you know, Henry Ford's first automobiles ran on hemp ethanol. The body was also constructed from hemp plastic, and hemp plastic is 10 times stronger than steel. So I'm just so flabbergasted that we decided to take the hard road by extracting fossil fuels out of Mother Earth, you know, when we had the capability and the technology to use a way better resource. I'm just, you know, and on top of that, one more thing, you know, we can save around 4 billion trees per year if we switched back to using hemp for paper instead of timber. So come on, people.
Save our forests. Exactly. Thank you so much, Gina. It's so interesting. I just wish the hemp industry had as much lobbying power as the oil did. We'll be right back after this short break.
Life is a journey, and the Doherty Family College will help you get where you want to go. Located downtown Minneapolis, this affordable two-year college provides free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, one-on-one mentorship, and a Metro Transit pass, making DFC the perfect pathway to a bachelor's degree. Turn your dreams into reality. Connect with a counselor today at dfc.stthomas.edu.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host tonight, Wendy Pilot, also known as Hanajihihani, which means cares for them. This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. And tonight is Thursday, and on Thursdays we have the pleasure of having Robert Lilligren on. Robert is the president and CEO at the Native American Community Development Institute, also known as NACDI, in Minneapolis. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Yeah, bonjour, Wendy. Bonjour, Gina. Nice to see you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, Gina and I are hosting tonight as Robert is in a Ho-Chunk meeting. So,
yes, he is a busy and important guy, that Robert Pilot.
Yeah, well, we try to keep him humble over here.
That's your job. Did he have to travel to the meeting or was it electronic?
Electronic. He's actually right down the hall in another room on a Zoom call. So here we are. Yeah.
Yeah, because we're kind of coming out of hiding, huh?
I think we are. To go back. Yeah. You know, I have meetings for Humane Lobby Day with my Senator Aaron Murphy and my Representative Dave Pinto, and it's still this year again on Zoom. So this is the second year in a row that I'm presenting some humane issues and bills that we want to have passed here in Minnesota. But I was kind of disappointed that they're still doing the Zoom meetings. I can't wait to, you know, see them in person. I just feel like, I don't know, it's just so much better and more personable. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, I love being in person, but I'm kind of cautious as well. So I'm respectful of the distance activities. But more and more, you know, I was in person last night, as a matter of fact, in a meeting. We're starting to come online in the community, a lot more face-to-face community stuff happening. Next Friday, we're going to have a day at the Hill for this initiative called the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative Day at the Capitol. Mm. And that's going to be in person. So that'll be sort of the first rally type thing that I've attended since COVID. So little by little.
Yeah, what happens during that?
During that day at the Capitol?
Yeah, what is that involved?
Sure. So it's this group called the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative, and it's the urban orgs across the metro, across the state, really, have come together, and it's an effort to bring more capital dollars into the community to support the work of these organizations. Many of them have facilities that are kind of at the end of their useful life. They need some significant infusions of cash.
Well, we just lost Robert for 1 second, but I think he's got it handled because he just gave me the 1 minute, hand up. So we'll see what happens here.
Cool. Sorry about that.
Okay. No problem. No problem.
Technology's just been so weird lately. It mutes itself. So I took my headset off. So yeah. So these urban orgs have come together. We've identified about $90 million worth of need amongst the organizations. About a dozen or so projects. And the important part is that we're working collaboratively to support each other's requests. We're going in as sort of one big request at the state from the state legislature under the leadership of Dr. Joe Hobart at the American Indian Community Development Corporation. We've really professionalized our approach. We've built on work we've been doing for several years here, but it's been a very successful endeavor. And so a week from tomorrow, we'll be at the Capitol meeting with legislators in person. We'll hold a rally, a press event around it. And so fingers crossed that we can really help to meet some of the Native orgs' needs, which will then help meet the community's needs.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure that some of those needs are like food sovereignty, I'm guessing housing for the homeless.
Yep. So just about every organization provides some service like that. Food, yeah. Shelter, mental health, physical health, chemical mm-hmm. health services. The Minneapolis American Indian Center has a significant redesign and rebuild that we're just on the threshold of realizing here. So that's one of our priorities. McGizzy Communications here in Minneapolis, one of our beloved organizations, does communications training for youth, a lot of youth programming. Their building burned during the George Floyd riots, following George Floyd's murder. That's another
priority. It didn't actually just, right, it just didn't burn. I mean, it was literally grounded. There wasn't anything like hardly left in that whole building. I was down
for that whole block, and you know, it was right across the street from the third police precinct that burned. The community, the AIM protectors, the community stepped forward and really protected the property. They were able to give it a lot of archived, irreplaceable archived media out of there before the fire. And I think it's notable that the building itself never experienced any graffiti or vandalism, but it caught fire because all the buildings around it were burning. Mm-hmm. And so the fire spread. And so the community did a valiant job of protecting that asset. And then it burned and it was a brand new building.
They've been
for about a year.
Exactly. And now that whole block there, there were quite a few buildings there. It's still empty. And I think they have a community garden there on the corner. I've passed by. I don't know really what that is.
There's a garden there. There is an art piece that Angela Two-Stars, the director of All My Relations Arts Gallery, in a really rapidly career as a public artist. So there's a piece there that's built on sort of rebuilding and regrowth. There was a restaurant there called Gandhi Mahal. Great.
Yes, we've eaten there. We've eaten there. Indian food, right?
It was Indian food, yep. And then they had all kinds of urban agriculture. They had aquaponics. Mm-hmm. They worked closely with a Native church in South Minneapolis on food programming and food sovereignty. And the owner of Gandhi Mahal, Rul Islam, is that his name? I may have that a little wrong, but he is just this great civic-minded person, community-minded. And I remember when his building burned, he said something like, change has to happen, and if my building burning down needs to be part of that change, then so be it. We'll rebuild, or something like that. Super noble. Beautiful scented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. Yeah, Robert and I had went there quite a few times to have dinner. But yeah. And, you know, whether they're going to rebuild there in that spot or not, who knows what the future will hold. But right. Yeah. So what else would you like to discuss tonight, Robert?
Well, it's kind of, you know, up to you. It's usually just kind of casual conversation. But one thing I've been following is the Supreme Court.
I have a couple of things too. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, what were you going to say, Wendy?
I have a couple of things that I want to bring up with you. But yeah, go ahead. What you were going to say.
Well, no, let's go where you want to go. Let's go.
Well, mine is silly. I was talking to Gina about this yesterday about how daylight savings time, they may not change it, and they're kind of talking about it. But I brought up the fact that, you know, my Robert told me that he read that in the middle of the winter, if we keep things the way it is now, in the middle of the winter, it will not get light in the morning until 8:51 a.m. So knowing that, Gina and I were talking about the pros and cons of that and whether that would be good or not. I was just, you know, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, I would like it not to change.
You know, I would like it not to change also.
But yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I would almost prefer it to be standard time for that very reasons. And you know, people who don't live in the Northland don't know what it's like when you only have 8 hours of sunlight a day during the winter. So
yeah, it's really, you know,
really bad. Hour in the morning matters, but I will be happier when it doesn't change.
Yes, when it doesn't change. And then we were talking about, you know, like the school kids, how it could be dangerous in the morning for them sitting, you know, waiting at the bus and like, you know, walking to school. My solution is just to give all the kids reflective vests and make that like mandatory that they have to wear, them.
I love reflective clothes on kids or those tennis shoes that light up. Even on mine, I mean, I'm no kid at all, but every so often I'll realize that something I'm wearing has reflective material in it, you know, when I get outside. In the dark, it's like, oh, a ski jacket reflects, you know, the windbreaker reflects.
Right, or the bottom, like the sides of your sneakers or something.
Right, but,
you
know,
like Robert and I, like we're getting older, and I have to tell you that driving now at night, like if I see somebody walking across the street and they don't have reflective anything on, I have a hard time seeing them. I really do. And I agree. Yeah, so
if I can chime in about that, Wendy.
Absolutely.
Blueberries, if you eat blueberries, even within 48 hours of eating blueberries, they heighten your sight. So even your night sight. So if you eat blueberries every day, that'll make it all better.
Robert eats blueberries every day. He does. He puts them in his oatmeal. I know that for a fact. Yeah. So I'm going to start eating blueberries. But I don't think his sight is much better than mine. I have to say that. And I don't eat blueberries, but we'll see what happens.
Right. But I'm with you. Sometimes people be out there dressed in all dark clothing. I don't even really, you know, I don't see him until the last second. I was like, don't assume I see you.
That's right. You better look behind you and look both ways before you cross the street. We're here with Robert Lilligren. Robert is the president and CEO at the Native American Community Development Institute, and we'll be right back.
Is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Stay healthy this winter by protecting yourself, your family, and your community from COVID-19. Get a vaccine or booster. COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and free, and approved for everyone over the age of 5. Wear a mask outdoors in crowds and indoor settings, and lay low or get tested before visiting family and friends or attending events. To get more tips, schedule your vaccine, or get tested, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. That's ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
Navigating COVID while protecting yourself can be difficult. Fortunately, there's a hotline you can call with any questions. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on vaccines, booster shots, and testing sites. Right now, booster shots are available to anyone over the age of 18 for those who are eligible. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline can also help with housing, food, medical, and educational support. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19, vaccinations, booster shots, or testing, please call 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986.
Hi, I'm Anna, and I'm 8 years old, and I'm getting my COVID vaccine. If you're between 5 and 11 years old, you can get vaccinated too. Getting the jab might seem a little scary, but there is lots of good reasons to do it. You'll be protected from COVID, and you'll be less likely to spread it to people like family and friends. Have your parents find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov.
Hey, Minnesota, it's Brad Friedman, host of the Bradcast. We'll expose all the latest schemes, frauds, and more weeknights at 7 on AM 950.
The Senior Linkage Line is a free statewide service of the Minnesota Board on Aging in partnership with Trellis. I have volunteered with seniors nearly 15 years, working alongside their compassionate team. I am honored to partner with Trellis as we help our elders find housing, compare costs of Medicare prescriptions, and learn how to avoid fraud and scams targeting seniors. We help our elders optimize well-being as they age, and we can help you too. Reach out today at trellisconnects.org.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by, stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for cloudy skies overnight with a low around 30, Friday cloudy with a high near 44, and Saturday sunny with a high around 53.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has been providing a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. They offer one of the most extensive Chinese menus in the Twin Cities, and they have takeout available too. Learn more about the Great Wall Restaurant at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm hosting tonight Wendy Pilot, also known as Hana Jihi Hani. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Native Roots Trading Post. We're located at 700 Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis on the first floor of the Dayton's Building. And this Saturday, March 19th, we're going to have Henry Boucher. And Henry was a great Native American player, hockey player, from the 1970s. And we'll have him at the store, and he's going to be signing some books. So come on down. It starts at 10 a.m. and we'll see how long we go for. Right now we're talking with Robert Lilligren, and Robert is the president and CEO at the Native American Community Development Institute in Minneapolis. Welcome back, Robert. And before I rudely interrupted you, I think I know what you were going to bring up for us to talk about, and I think it's really important. Biden's announcement to appoint Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court. So I think that's a great subject for us to talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think it's so interesting. And I was just having a little back and forth with Robert Pilot before tonight about it. And I've just been following it. I just think it's a fascinating process. And, you know, the judge will replace another with, you know, known as a liberal judge on the court. And so So there's not a huge gain there, but the process has been so interesting in Judge Brown Jackson nomination. And, you know, suddenly so many Republicans want to slow the process down. You know, there's no hurry here. And, you know, it takes the average of about 45 days generally to nominate a Supreme Court justice. The last two have gone considerably faster than that. And the last appointment was like 2 weeks, the process. And
so, exactly. Yeah.
So that was kind of rushed through. But one thing that really interests me about, not only would Judge Brown Jackson be the first African-American woman to serve on the Supreme Court, which, you know, it's about time. Okay. I think we can all agree. But she'll also be the first public defender to serve on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And in general, public defenders have been kind of avoided as Supreme Court nominees because they can defend, you know, they some unsympathetic clients throughout their careers. And President Biden has, you know, vowed to not only diversify the court by nominating a black woman to the Supreme Court, but he's been really making good on that commitment through his other appointments as well. And he wants judges that have criminal prosecution experience. And so some 30% of the judges he's been able to nominate for federal posts have been public defenders in the past. So that's interesting. And of those, half of them are women, or a large percentage of them are women of color.
Yeah.
So I just think that's saying some good things about the future of justice in this country.
Mm-hmm. Really? Yes, I agree 100%. And she has a lot of background . She's smart. She's a Harvard graduate. She went to Harvard Law School. She's extremely intelligent and well-rounded, and I think that she would be a great addition to the Supreme Court. It's great to have a well-rounded Supreme Court. Our previous administration didn't want a well-rounded Supreme Court. You know, he wanted the right-wing, conservative Supreme Court, and this will help.
Agree. And the court's been stacked with, you know, with extreme conservative judges, you know, and so this will bring some balance, let's hope. But the makeup of the court will change over time.
Yeah.
You know, we're in kind of a not so happy place right now, but I'm always hopeful, you know, and the Senate has confirmed Judge Jackson three times. They voted on her, including her most recent appointment as a district judge. And so as a federal district judge. And so she, circuit judge rather. And so she, you know, she's already been vetted multiple times by the same body that's going to vote on her Supreme Court judge nomination. And so, it'd be interesting to see how they can justify, rationalize not supporting her when they've already supported her so many times.
Yeah. I don't know the process, so I hope that it happens, and I hope that, you know, she is appointed and it does happen. So I'm really glad about that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is that, you know, right now here in Minnesota, you know, we're our House is blue, but our Senate is red.
Right.
So with the upcoming elections and people running now, you have a lot of experience with this. How would you tell people to get involved, and how can we switch? How can we get our Senate and our House to be blue? Do you have any advice about that, or what, like, the average person just listening to the radio show can do?
So, yeah, thanks for asking. And there's a lot that folks can do, right? You can contribute to a party, to the, you know, or to a campaign to support it. There's going to be a very, very focused effort to do exactly what you're talking about, and to flip the Senate, to hold our state house blue, and to flip the Senate. The one thing that I always tell folks that are interested in politics and how to get involved is to volunteer on a campaign. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost you money. It just costs you time, but you will learn so much about how the system works. You will learn so much about your candidate, and you'll just make such incredible connections mm-hmm. and networking. And I always tell people this, especially if they're interested in running for office someday, volunteer on a campaign. But even if you just want to help turn the Senate blue, or just to be involved, it's empowering, right? You're doing something. You're taking action. And local campaigns are volunteer-driven initiatives. Mm-hmm. And the candidate's going to love you, whether he or she gets elected or not. But especially if she or he gets elected, you know, you'll have a connection in office. But you will learn so much about how this stuff works by volunteering on a campaign.
Yeah. And, you know, I believe that there's so many things, like if you want to stay home and not go out, you could send emails out, you could do phone banking, you could do things like that, or you could get boots on the ground and, you know, do door knocking. And I'm sure that there's so many different opportunities for whatever that you would like to do and whatever fits, you know, your personality. Because I know, like myself, door knocking is not a thing for me, but I know people who love to do that. You know, they just love doing that, and they knock on people's door, and they're engaged with their community and their neighbors. So there's all different kinds of opportunities for everyone there. Yeah.
Well, in these last few years, we haven't been able to do it, right? Because of COVID, most campaigns aren't going to door knock. Some did, but most didn't. And so, or at least that I'm aware of. And so this year we're back at it. So that's another way to support. There's so many jobs on a campaign. But this is going to be quite a year. You're going to see a lot of resources come into the state. We want to hold the governor's office. We want to hold the House. And we want to flip the Senate. And I think all of those are doable. And there's so many variables. Just because the political scene is kind of messy at the national level right now, and especially within the Republican Party, where, you know, it's really not clear who's in charge, or, you know, if the former president's in charge, are people following him? You know, is there opportunity there? Because there's going to be division within the party. And so midterms, you know, it's always gloom and doom for the party of the sitting president. But I don't know that all that sort of traditional wisdom is going to really play out.
It'll be interesting. It really will be interesting. Definitely. All right, well, we'll see what happens. I always like to get involved. I like to know who my representative, my state council members are, my senator. You know, I like to, and you know, for people out there, they may be like nervous to meet those people and to talk to them, but they work for you. That's why they, you know, they're in office. And I think that, you know, getting to know those people and then they know you, I think it's easier to work with them when an issue comes up, so that you can resolve it, and they'll be more on your side.
For sure, for sure. And just having that relationship, right? It's the relationship business politics are, and that getting over that intimidation piece. Mm-hmm. You know, this person has a title, they're in an office. So getting beyond that, and, you know, I sometimes say that access is the currency of politics. You know, access to that candidate, access to that elected official. And so by volunteering, building that relationship, that's one way that you gain that access. And then you can find, your needs best met by the government, because you're the one that's talking to the elected official. You're the one with the relationship.
Yeah, I always encourage people to talk to candidates, like ask them, what are you going to do for me? You know, they're the ones who are making those decisions, and then let them know what your issues are in your community. You know, on top of that, let's start holding them accountable. You know, we Minnesotans elected Governor Walz after he said he wasn't going to approve of Line 3, and then he turned around and approved Line 3. So right. It's another step in holding candidates and politicians accountable is if you just talk to them and let them know, hey, I'm interested. I need to hold you accountable. This is what, these are the problems that are going on in my community. And it's your responsibility to help with those problems, especially if you're running for any type of office.
Right on, Jenny. You're exactly right. It's that accountability piece. And we also have tribal elections going on here. If you're a Minnesota Chippewa tribe, I think, do all of them have? We have a, White Earth has a primary August or April 5th. General coming election coming up in June. I've never seen so much outreach to the urban community from candidates on White Earth, which is good. Half the votes are here, you know, are off reservation. I'm still not seeing sort of the platform planks around supporting the urban community, but I think that's got to come as candidates realize the votes here can elect them.
We'll be right back after this short break. Thank you, Robert. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Gina, see you soon.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me, Wen. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
The Senior Linkage Line is a free statewide service of the Minnesota Board on Aging in partnership with Trellis. I have volunteered with seniors nearly 15 years, working alongside their compassionate team. I am honored to partner with Trellis as we help our elders find housing, compare costs of Medicare prescriptions, and learn how to avoid fraud and scams targeting seniors. We help our elders optimize well-being as they age, and we can help you too. Reach out today at trellisconnects.org.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm hosting today. My name is Wendy Pilot, also known as Hanajihihani. And we have Robert Blake, and Robert is the Solar Bear with the Solar News. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Howl! It's always good to have three. Three wolves is a good pack, and that gives the best howl, at least right?
You know, Wendy, you know my brother that grew up with your husband, right?
Yeah, yes.
His name... Ojibwe name was Chi Maingan, Big Wolf.
Wow, I love that.
So the first time that I went on the show and you did the Howling for Wolves, I was like, and Robert asked me to come back on again. I was like, Robert, can we do the Howling for Wolves? Well, that's Wendy's thing. And I'm like, well, we got to do the Howling for Wolves.
Yeah, we do it every day. Howling for Wolves, I have to tell you, is a great organization. And they have been so loyal and with us from day one, advertising on Native Roots Radio. So we really appreciate the work that they do to help you know, save Minnesota wolves. So I really, you know, I always appreciate them. So thank you. So what do you have?
Well, you know what? I just, you know, hey, real quickly, you got me on this whole thing of your last segment there. And I just want to say, so we got 67 senators, right?
Yep.
And we're a couple of people short on the blue side, right?
Yep.
Now, can you imagine if we had a blue Senate and the kind of policies we could get through in the state, we could literally be the California of the Midwest. So, you know, I'm the solar bear, and the solar bear is like all about renewable energy and saving this planet so we can have something, you know, for the future for our kids. And I'm telling you now, I used to go and visit visit Tomasino, right? In his office, and you know, his wife was actually Ojibwe. You know, I don't know if people know that, but you know, he's leaving the Senate now because of, you know, he's got ALS and whatnot. But you know, I mean, there's a position, there's a spot right there, right? I mean, that's you know, and he was an independent. Okay, so now you got Bach, right? You know, Bach hasn't been too friendly to Native people either. I mean, he was against that whole water, clean water for Fond du Lac up there. You know, he voted against that water tower for Fond du Lac. I mean, I'm just saying Bach is a guy on the – he's independent too. I think we could take Bach out. And, you know, there's a couple of other senators up that way now that I think we can do. Now, and on the other side, I think that if we got out the vote for directions voting, right? If we put our efforts in getting out the vote for the tribes, I think we could take out Pete Stauber too, who I just hate. That's a big thing. I dislike. Okay, I don't agree with his policies, but I think we could take out Pete Stauber too. In the 8th congressional district. Now, I'm gonna say it. I mean, I think we got some people that we can run against these guys, and we can do it. So I mean, listen, the possibilities are there for the tribes to play a major role, and I could see this as some type of Stacey Abrams, like the way you mobilize and get people to the voting booths for future, you know, political, you know, classes or something. Here's how they did it in Georgia. Here's how they did it in Minnesota. I mean, I think that would be great. So I would love to just get the Native population mobilized and move these people out of office.
And don't we have an Anishinaabe running against Pete Stauber? I mean, that's in Minnesota District 8, right? And all 7 of Northern Minnesota tribes are in District 8. So I think it would be a great idea to elects an Anishinaabe in office, especially, you know, since we have all those tribes in that area, we might as well get one of us in there to represent us.
Well, I mean, I'm for, we got the Kozlowski, is that her name? Kozlowski up there, and she's running for state rep now in Duluth, and she's been the communications manager. She's from Grand Portage, I believe. She's from Grand Portage. I mean, man, I would like to tell her to run for Senate. I mean, you know, but she feels like she's got the state rep wrapped up there for, you know, so, I mean, to be quite honest with you, Gina, I mean, anybody that is Native and running, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going to support anyone that's probably a person of color, a woman, I'm going to support probably, you know. Yeah. But I know how difficult it is to run. I mean, I ran for city council in St. Paul, so I get it. It's difficult. It's hard.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because my brother, I'm just going to throw it out there. I got no shame. My brother, Ernest Joseph Oppegard Peltier, is running for District 8 against Pete Stauber. So he's having fun running his campaign. It is a little difficult at times, but... and unfortunately, he has to quit the job of his dreams to run, you know, which he's really, really struggling with. But he's excited. So, and I keep telling him, you're going to win. I'll see you in Washington next year. So, and he's great. He's super smart. So it's just, you know, he's a perfect person for the position, especially with, you know, how hard he's fight for the indigenous communities. I'm afraid, though, because, you know, some people say, you know, once you turn a politician, it switches something in you and you just turn evil and greedy. And I'm like, no. So we'll see if that's true or not.
Yeah. Look at Deb Haaland. I mean, I think Deb Haaland keeps it real. I mean, and you look at, you know, I mean, I don't know. That just came to my mind for some reason. But I mean, you know, I think it's really about the person. And, you know, I think it's just keeping to your morals and keeping to what you said. And like you guys said in that last segment, it's about being held accountable. You know what I mean? Like, you need to have those sessions to meet, you know, your constituents. You know what I mean? Like, you need to talk to them. You know, you need to meet with them. I think that's so important. And I don't think enough of our politicians are doing it.
Yeah, and people shouldn't be scared to talk to politicians. We pay their salaries, you know, and they're the ones who are in the background working to make our lives better. And, you know, are they really making our lives better, or are they just sitting around collecting a check?
So, Wendy, it is called the Solar News with the Solar Bear.
The Solar News with the Solar Bear. Yes.
And it's on Thursday. So all of you people listening right now to Thursday's show, you are in for a treat, because this never happens on Thursday. But I wanted to talk about the Tribal Energy Development Organization that Red Lake was just awarded mm-hmm. by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Department of the Interior, Energy Development section of the organization. This is basically so important. And getting the TITO status, right, is like, you know, we are going to be able to sell power to, say, San Francisco. We're going to be able to sell power to Minneapolis. We're going to be able to sell power to whoever wants to buy our power from across the country. So consequently, we are going to be building 250 to 400 megawatts of solar and utility scale solar up in the northern part of Minnesota. Now, just to put that in perspective, we've got over 1 gigawatt of solar in the state of Minnesota. So we're going to be building about half the amount of solar that's in the state of Minnesota right now. So I'm so excited about this, because I get to build it. I get to be involved in it. And that's why I say this is so critical and so important. And you know how I feel about energy sovereignty. You know how I feel about all tribes getting into renewable energy, having their own tribal utilities, us creating our own tribal utilities commission so we can have a say at the table with the Public Utilities Commission. This is just the start of it.
Thank you so much, Bob, for all your hard work.
We really appreciate you. The Solar News with the Solar Bear. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Thank you to Gina Peltier and Robert Lilligren. We'll be back tomorrow.